Genesis really backs this whole thing up. We've been in the summer series called Did God Really Say on the book of Genesis. So we began in Genesis chapter 1. We will now conclude the book of Genesis today. And so I hope it's been a ministry to your heart. You can turn with me to Genesis chapter 41 is where we'll begin. We'll end up in Genesis 50, really focused primarily on Genesis 50. But I hope it's been a ministry to your own heart and life this summer. It has been honestly one of my favorite series that I have ever preached through, along with the other guys who helped me do this. It really has been just personally impactful, and hope it has been for you as well. Next Sunday, before we get into this, don't want to miss that. It's kickoff Sunday. That's always a significant Sunday for many reasons. We start all new small groups that day and that week, and all of our ministries kick back off for the year as our church calendar year kicks off. But next week will be particularly important because I'm going to make a very important announcement that will affect a lot of things. And so you can just guess all week what that is, but it's going to be really a significant thing, and we really are really, really excited about it and can't wait to unfold that to you. So you'll just be in suspense all week long, I know. Probably won't even be able to sleep, but we'll see you next Sunday, okay? And I look forward to doing that with you. We have been, over the last 2 weeks, we have covered the life of Joseph in the book of Genesis. It's a long, long story in the book that really concludes the book, and so we spent the first week talking about the beginning of the story, then last week kind of the middle part. We will conclude his story today. And if you are not familiar with the Bible, don't know who Joseph is or what the story is about, or if you just missed the last 2 weeks and you're just coming in here, let me bring us all together on the same page about what I'm just going to call the roller coaster of Joseph's life. It really was a roller coaster. Not a one person in this room would choose to live his life. The man dealt with much suffering, much pain. He was wronged again and again and again, and yet God weaves a beautiful story in the midst of it. So let's talk about the roller coaster of Joseph's life here. First thing, he was favored by his father. This is often described as Joseph in the coat of many colors. His father had given him a coat and really did love him more than he loved his brothers. The Bible doesn't really condone that, just says that as a reality, this is the situation. Beyond there, his brothers hated him. They threw him in a pit. If you're an older brother, older sister, you've probably done something similar. You know, this is relatively harmless at this point. And then the story takes a hard turn that we talked about last week, where his brothers actually sell him into slavery in Egypt. So there's traders that were going by, and they sell their brother. Ultimately, he is bought by a man who's the captain of the guard in Egypt, a guy by the name of Potiphar. And as you read the story looks like it's actually going to start making a turn for the positive, and then he is wrongfully accused by Potiphar's wife. She says that he tried to force himself upon her, and so he is immediately thrown into prison, and he spends actually a few years in prison. Now, where we left off the story last week was where Pharaoh had a dream. And Joseph was able to interpret dreams by the gift of God. And so he interprets Pharaoh's dreams. And if you remember, this will bring us to where we're going to launch from today. Joseph tells him that, listen, here's what your dream means. Here's what God is saying. That there's going to be 7 years of plentiful food in the land of Egypt. And so like it's about to be good 7 years, followed by 7 years of severe famine. So he said, listen, you need to store up food and grain and all that you're going to need during the 7 years of plenty, because there's a time coming where times are going to be terrible. Like, it is going to stink to be in Egypt and across the world, because there's not going to be any food. Because of this, Pharaoh says, hey, I like this guy. Why don't you do it? He is raised to command, to second in command in Egypt. If there's ever a guy in the Bible that we all can relate to, you know, sometimes you read the Bible and you're like, man, I don't relate with that person. She had such great faith, or he had such great faith. It never seems like anything bad happened. Joseph's a guy who every one of us can see a little bit of our lives in his story. Man, there was a time when I was wrongfully accused. There was a time when I was sinned against by others. There was a time when evil was done to me. And so we really do and can relate with this guy named Joseph. So let's pick up the story. Like I said, we're going to begin in Genesis chapter 41. We'll really focus on Genesis 50. And so let's pull up these first few verses. Look at verse 56 of Genesis 41. It says this: so when the famine had spread over all the land, Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold the Egyptians, for the famine was severe in the land of Egypt. Now just stop there. Here's the picture. They have opened wide the storehouses for the people of Egypt to be able to come and buy food during the famine. But it didn't just stop with the people of Egypt. Look at verse 57. Moreover, all the earth, people from all over the earth came to Egypt to Joseph to buy grain because the famine was severe, not just in Egypt, but it was over all the earth. And you're never going to guess who shows up at Joseph's doorsteps. You know what it is? It was his brothers, people who wronged him, ruined his life, sold him into slavery, lied to their father that he was killed by an animal. Those same brothers here. They stand right before him. They don't recognize Joseph, as you can imagine. Joseph being second in command in Egypt, he is in full Egyptian garb, and so they don't recognize him, but obviously he recognizes his brothers. And so the next 4 to 5 chapters, really Genesis 42 through 46, it's kind of this cat and mouse game where Joseph is sending them back and forth to Canaan, where they're from, and back to Egypt. And finally, he's reunited with his father, the father who loved him so much, thought he was dead. Genesis 47, Pharaoh gives his family a piece of land in Goshen. And I'm not talking about East Fayetteville, it's a different story. We're talking about Goshen, like way east across the sea, okay? For his land, for his people to live. 48 and 49, those chapters, Jacob is now dying. So the father of all these brothers and of Joseph, after he's been reunited with Joseph, is now dying. And so he actually dies in this passage. That's where we pick it up. And before we pick it up in Genesis 50, I just want to give you a big idea of the day here. And here's what the big idea is. Evil done to us produces unforgiveness in us. I don't know if you've ever experienced this personally. I really don't have any doubt that you have. In other words, unforgiveness often has a cause. And usually at the end of that cause is someone. And so even when I talk about unforgiveness and I say that word, most likely there's a face that pops into your mind. And your blood may be beginning to boil right now and you think, well, I can't stand them. I don't like them. I wish I wouldn't have come to church today, okay? But we're going to talk about a lot about that today. I'm going to give you 4 things from Genesis chapter 50 that I really believe is of God. I don't say that because I am saying these things. I just really believe. I've preached this passage numerous times. I've read through this who knows how many times, just personally. And I really feel like God kind of took this in a different direction than probably I would have expected. 3 out of the 4 things I'm going to share with you today deal with forgiveness or unforgiveness. And so I have no idea why the Lord's led this direction, but I think I'm looking at the reason why, and I think I've looked at it all day long, not only for my own heart, but for your heart as well. So let's look at this together. Let's pick up the story, Genesis chapter 50. Look at verse 15. It says, when Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, it may be that Joseph will hate us and pay us back for all the evil that we did to him. And so they sent a message to Joseph saying, your father gave this command before he died. Here's how you could translate this. Dad said, like that's really what's going on. Dad said, say to Joseph, please forgive the transgression of your brothers and their sin because they did evil to you. And now please forgive the transgression of the servants of the God of your father. And what did Joseph do? Joseph wept when they spoke to him. His brothers also came and they fell down before him and said, behold, we are your servants. Here's the first thing I want to talk about today. True forgiveness does not have to be convinced or earned. True forgiveness does not have to be convinced or earned. His brothers are freaked out. And can we just be honest? Rightly so, right? I mean, they are rightly concerned that Joseph is about to kill them, to punish them, to throw them in prison now that their dad is dead and he doesn't have that kind of weighing over him. And so he's freaked out. They're freaked out. And when you think about, they're trying to convince him to forgive them. They're trying to earn his forgiveness. Hey, we are your servants, Joseph. And Dad said, let us convince you. Dad said before he died that you were supposed to forgive us. And they had this thing they thought they could either earn or convince Joseph to forgive them. You know, all of us have an innate sense that when it comes to forgiveness, we feel like we have to earn it or convince someone to forgive us. You say, well, how does that play out? Let's talk about marriage for those of you who are married in the room. Any husbands ever do anything wrong in here? Hey, I got a willing group at the 11:30. The others, not so much, okay? But there's those times when, you know, you say a harsh word to your wife or you didn't follow through on something, whatever it may be, and you just apologize and say, you know what, I shouldn't have done that. And she may say, I forgive you. And But there's just something in us that, like, there's a category of sinning against your wife. There's the flowers category of, like, okay, I need to go a step further. We need flowers. And then there's, like, that slim category that is, like, flowers will not cut it. I already tried, and now I need like, a steak dinner for her, you know, at some nice restaurant, candlelight dinner, and there's that, okay? What is that within us? It is some desire, some innate thing in us that we think, man, I've got to convince her to forgive me. I've got to earn her forgiveness. It's the same way people respond when they hear the gospel of Jesus. Think about this. God sent Jesus to die on the cross for your sin, and God resurrected him from the dead, that if you would come to a point when you would repent from your sin, turn your life over to Jesus Christ, he would save you and change everything about your life. Now, most people hear that, and in fact, we give some sense of that message every single week here. And so there are many people who walk into these doors, and God speaks to them directly, and they're like, man, that is exactly what I need. Man, I need Jesus. This is exactly what God has been doing in my heart. I understand this is what he's been pulling me towards. This is the emptiness that I feel. I need Christ. And I know that guy up there is saying that I can do that today. I can receive Jesus today, but I probably need to leave. Like, if he knew what I knew about my life, I need to leave for at least a few weeks, maybe a few months, depending on the season. And I need to, like, I need to go and just live right for a little while. I need to stop doing some things. I need to start doing some things. And then maybe God will love me. Maybe then I can earn God's forgiveness. Maybe then I can convince God by a good life that I am worthy of forgiveness. That is anti-Bible, by the way. You realize that in the book of Romans, God says it this way, but God shows his love for us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. This passage does not say, but God showed his love for us in that when we got our lives straight, when we stopped going out so much, if you know what I'm saying, when I started going to Cross Church more, then Christ died for me. It's the opposite. You see, when you were at your worst in sin, Jesus was at his best, dying on the cross for you and for me. God loved you before you were born, before you even thought about sin. And yes, he loved you in the midst of your sin, and he is calling people out, even today in this room, calling you out of sin into a life of following Jesus Christ. Those of you who are followers of Christ, you know how this plays out in the Christian walk. Of when you fall into sin and you may ask God for forgiveness, but you feel like, man, I've got to have at least 3 to 5 solid days of Bible reading and prayer before God's going to look at me again. Like, before he's not going to be mad at me, before I can really pray and sense that he's there. And it's this tug of war we have. Even last night, in the middle of the night. Anybody else's kid get up in the middle of the night last night? Yeah. Hallelujah. See that hand? Yes, all over. It's like 1:30, one of our children got up. And I'm a bit delirious. They were a bit delirious. Like, they didn't even realize they were awake and just crying. And so I just got rough with my words towards them in the middle of the night. And as soon as I laid back down in bed, I'm like, Lord, I shouldn't have done that. Would you just please forgive me? You know, I'm sorry. That was wrong. I wake up this morning, and literally not the first thought. First thought was, I don't want to wake up. Second thought was this of, man, I need to ask the Lord for forgiveness because I... you know, what happened last night. Already done it. And then, no joke, like, honest. And then I remember what I was about to preach to y'all. And it caught my attention. I was like, hold up. I don't have to convince God to forgive me. I don't have to earn God's forgiveness. And I would just say it this way. If you ever hope to walk in freedom in your relationship with Christ, you have to beat the earning spirit out of your soul, of this sense of, man, I can be good enough so that God will like me. No, the whole reason Jesus came is because we weren't good enough. And there has only been one person who has ever earned forgiveness, and his name is Jesus Christ, and he did it on our behalf. Now, it's interesting when you look at the life of Joseph here in this chapter, and you look at this kind of paralleled with the forgiveness that Jesus offers, it's interesting how they just flow along the same track here. Let's keep reading the story. Look at verse 19. How does Joseph respond to his brothers here? It says, but Joseph said to them, do not fear, for am I in the place of God? Like, am I in the place of God? Am I to judge? And it brings us to an important second thing, and this one's about unforgiveness. And so here's the statement I want you to write down. Unforgiveness is rooted in the belief that I need to be God. Unforgiveness is rooted in the belief that I need to be God. Now, not one person in this room who is maybe dealing with unforgiveness would ever define it like that. Okay, so if you say, well, I've got real unforgiveness issues with a parent who wronged me and or abandoned me, or a spouse that did this, or a friend or a coworker who did this, a boss who messed me over, I've got real unforgiveness issues. You would never define it like that. And yet, when I think when we dig into it, and when you really begin to look at motives and you really begin to look at the root belief, unforgiveness is rooted in the belief that I need to be God. Now, let's be honest with one another, okay? Just you can call it out loud with me, okay? Now, was Joseph wronged? Okay? Did his brothers deserve punishment? Was he deeply sinned against? And don't be spiritual right now, but just like in our human flesh, would we look at the situation and say, he absolutely has a right for revenge? Yes, right? I mean, that's the answer to all of those questions. And I just pause here before we even move on. You got to understand, you will also be in the same shoes. You will consistently be wronged by people. You'll be wronged by people in your family. You'll be wronged by your husband or wife. You'll be wronged by your own children. You'll be wronged by people at the office you thought you could trust. You'll be wronged by the best of friends you've ever had. And yes, you'll be wronged by people in this church. That's life. It's people. And so we've got to understand, okay, so how do we deal with this thing called unforgiveness? Because all of us will have evil done against us and wrong done against us, but how do we really handle this? And what I'm saying to you today is that unforgiveness is the root belief that I need to be God. And the problem with that is this, that's a flawed mindset. You say, well, how is that a flawed mindset? It's a flawed mindset whenever I feel like I am in control of the judgment. And when I believe that I am in control of how someone is judged, let me speak to you from a personal standpoint. That has never led me anywhere healthy. It never does. In fact, it only brings brokenness and it's only brought destruction in my life. And I think it's probably done the same for you. And so said in a simpler way, it's the root belief that I need to be God. Like I just need it. Like, I need to right the wrongs that have been done to me. I need to repay for what's been done to me. I need to bring punishment for what was done to me. And yes, I need to bring justice to what has been done to me. And you know, we can all play the game, but we've all been there, right? You wrong me once, that's okay. You wrong me twice, I will cut you, girl, right? I mean, you, ladies, you've been there, right? I mean, it comes out, you know? Like I said, this is a flawed mindset. Let me talk about what I'll just say is like a fourfold problem with this mindset. Okay, if you're note takers, have at it, okay? Number one, we were never called to be God. Do you know that in the scriptures you'll never find anywhere that points you to be like God in judgment? Like you determine how he or she gets punished. You never find it. Second, I think this is a big one, we can't actually bring justice most of the time. We often think about, well, I'm going to get revenge. Like I will repay what she has done to me. And in the end, you're like, I really can't all the way do that. Third one is just kind of in the form of a question. When it gets to the end of it, what's it really worth? What's it really worth? Like, you know how your mind plays games in this unforgiveness track? You ever had that happen to you? Where you're like, okay, well, I'm ticked because I got messed over. I'll tell you what I'm going to do to him. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to do this. And then she will pay because she did this. And I'm going to tell them this. I'm going to make sure everybody around them knows what kind of person they really are. And then I'm going to get to the end of it. And I just, when you get to the end of that in your mind, I just want you to ask the question, what's it really worth? Because honestly, I think sometimes we look like a lunatic and really we don't accomplish anything. Unforgiveness is like a cancer that spreads, man. It really, and you don't even know how much it overtakes your heart and your words and your mind. Fourth problem with this is the biggest one of all. It just doesn't heal the pain. We often think, well, I'll get even and then I'll feel better. No, you get even and you still feel bad. Revenge never brings healing. Only forgiveness brings healing. Okay, so there's like a twofold purpose of forgiveness. And often we only live in the first one. The first one says, okay, I need to forgive my wife. I need to forgive that person or your husband or whoever it may be. I need to forgive them for them. I need to release them from the penalty, okay? And that's part of it, no doubt. But I think a biblical thing for us not to miss is that forgiveness is just as much for you as it is for the person who has done and committed the offense. You will never be able to find freedom from unforgiveness until you just release it to God. You know, we're about to start school, obviously, and so your kid may have already started school or may in the next week or two. I always love watching little kids with their backpacks coming to the first day of school because it's overloaded, right? I mean, it's got school supplies and erasers, and you don't even do erasers anymore. That's that old school. You know, you got whatever, Trapper Keepers, huh? That's what's up. They're still around if you didn't know. And so, you know, they're walking in, and the little dorky kids are walking in with a backpack like this. And, you know, we take a picture, you know, not because it's cute of our kid, but they look like a dork and we want to send it to our buddies, you know, how ridiculous they look. And I got to be honest, I think if we were able to see with spiritual eyes today, I wonder how many of us just look ridiculous. Because we are carrying some things that we were never intended to carry. You know, Genesis is a book about your design, about God's design for man and for woman, God's desire for you in marriage. And I would just say this on the heels of all the designing of God in the book of Genesis, you were never designed nor intended to carry the weight of other people's offenses against you. That's why it never feels right. That's why unforgiveness just feels like, ugh, sometimes, like just dirty sometimes, because you were never designed to carry it. And the only freedom that you'll find is to have something supernatural happen in your life. And I would say it this way, someone supernatural, and that's Jesus, who can really take all the pain and all the mess of the evil that's been done against you, and he can turn it. That's a good segue into this next passage. Look at verse 20, probably the most famous passage in this entire story, and we just sang about it earlier. It says this is Joseph still speaking to his brothers. He says, as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring it about that many people should be kept alive as they are today. Here's the third thing about forgiveness. Forgiveness is trusting God's plan and character to bring about good in the midst of evil. Forgiveness is trusting God's plan and character to bring about good in the midst of evil. This is a major moment for Joseph here, by the way. I mean, this is the moment when it all comes together. Last week, if you were here, I talked to you about my grandmother used to cross stitch. So if you've ever seen somebody do the little cross stitch cloth or, you know, thing they'll frame, you see them kind of sewing back and forth. And if you look at the back end of it, it's just mumbled and jumbled, okay? It makes no sense. You don't know, you know, what the bird is supposed to look like or the scripture verse or the poem, okay? You don't know what any of that looks like. But when you flip it over, you're like, wow, that's beautiful. This is the moment. Genesis 50:20 is the moment when all the stuff that God has sovereignly weaved through Joseph's life that never seemed like it connected to one another now connects in full, and it's almost as if he turns over the cross stitch of his life and he's like, wow, what you guys meant for evil, God meant it for good so that not only you could be saved, but many people could be saved. And we talked about that thread of God's sovereignty that is weaving through every single one of our lives. If you ever want like a spiritual maturity test, if you ever want to see like, man, how am I doing in my walk with Christ? If you're like that kind of person who likes measurements and stuff, here's an easy measurement, okay? What do you believe about the sovereignty of God? Do I really believe that God is in control of all things and directing all things and weaving the story of my life in the good and the bad and the ugly and the roller coaster? You see, the sovereignty of God is the softest pillow that you'll ever lay your head upon. And when you really look at it, this is something that only comes with the depth of faith. You will never trust in the sovereignty of God by a Sunday-only mentality of Christianity, by the way. It's just not going to happen. Like, casual Christianity will never help you to deal with all the stuff that we're talking about today. And casual Christianity will never lead you to a belief in a God who is controlling all things for your good and his glory. But a real depth of faith will cause you to believe what God says about himself and to will cause you to believe and begin to see the thread of God's sovereignty throughout your life. And so I just want to ask you a question today. And nobody else may know what you're walking through, and you're sitting in here alone, and you're thinking, man, I don't know if he's talking to me or not right now, but here you go. Here's the question. Do you realize that God can bring good out of the evil that's been done to you? You realize that God can bring good out of whatever it is in the world that you're walking through right now in this moment. You see, the Christian cannot say when you look at the story of Joseph and you look at numerous other passages in the Bible, that there's no way the Christian can say, well, there is no good that can come from this. And we've probably all had that one or two situations in our life where we just said, man, even if we say it in faith, I know God is going to be good and God is going to do good through this, but man, I have no idea where, and I have no idea how. You look at the Charlottesville incident yesterday. How can good come from a bunch of white supremacist racists who then picked a fight with counter-protesters who were there, and then there's a big brawl, and then a maniac drives a car into the crowd of them? Like, how can good come from that? And here's where I think we have to be a place of hope and people of hope, that we somehow, because we know the book, we can say, listen, it's terrible and it is mind-blowingly evil what we saw yesterday. But man, somehow, even in the midst of that, God can bring good. I mean, that's the confidence of the believer. That's the confidence of the believer in major tragedies like that. And even more so, that's the confidence of the believer in your own individual personal life. Do you realize that God can do something new with your pain? Like, God can bring good out of evil. Were you abused? Verbally, physically, sexually? Has your reputation been ruined because of gossip? Have you been abandoned by a spouse, by a mom, by a dad, that you're still dealing with the pain of these things years and years and years later? Here's the confidence, not in Joseph that we have. Here's the confidence we have in the God of Joseph, that no matter where you are, no matter what you're walking through, you can trust in the sovereign hand of God to bring good even in the midst of evil here. You see, suffering of any kind, we talked a lot about suffering last week, and I'll just reiterate this again today, but suffering is an invitation to intimacy with God. It's an invitation to intimacy. And so there's some of you who you're like on the outside of this and you're looking in, you're like, yeah, I remember a time when I was walking through this. There are others of you who you're in the midst of it right now, like you're gasping for air in a sense, and you came to church. God, will you please speak to me? I'm desperate for you to say something to me today. Suffering is an invitation to intimacy. It's as if God is giving you a note that just says, listen, I know you're walking through some real, real tough stuff. And man, I'm carrying you when you don't even realize that I'm carrying you. And I want to walk through this with you. And if you'll walk this road with me, you will get more of a glimpse of me than you have ever had in your life. I quoted this quote last week. I thought it was appropriate again this week from William Law. He says this way, receive every inward and outward trouble, every disappointment, every trial, every uneasiness, every darkness and desolation with both your hands. Think about the picture there. When I grab a hold on what God is doing in my life, even if I hate it, as a blessed opportunity of dying to self and of entering into a fuller fellowship with your Savior. Look at no outward or inward trouble in any other view. Reject every other thought about it, and you will find that the day of your distress will become the blessed day of your spiritual prosperity. So have you or are you suffering in some way from somebody, the evil that's been done against you? Listen, God is calling you to a closer walk. You're just saying, okay, you just come. I'm about to give you a greater picture of me than you've ever had before in your life. Think about Joseph in the midst of all this, and we'll close on this note. It's remarkable when you think about all the suffering that Joseph entailed on behalf of family members. And here's where we end up. Here's the fourth thing. Even after all the suffering, Joseph still believed God. And what a deal. Even after all the suffering, Joseph still believed God. Look at verse 24. Look at the end of the passage here. This is later on in the story, and Joseph's about to die. He says, Joseph said to his brothers, I'm about to die, but God will visit you and will bring you up out of this land to the land that he swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. Just pause there. So what is this? This is a snapshot, not only of the guy named Abraham that we studied earlier in the summer, how God says, listen, I'm going to give you a land. There's going to be a promised land to the people of God. And if you view this, you also see a snapshot of the book of Exodus. What does Exodus record? The exodus of the Israelites out of Egypt. Why were they in Egypt? We just read about that. Then they became enslaved in Egypt, and now God's about to free them from Egypt. So that kind of gives you a full before and after picture here, but keep on reading. Then Joseph made the sons of Israel swear. Think about what he's saying. He's like on his deathbed. You swear to me you'll do this. You better promise me that you're going to do this. He says, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from here. So Joseph died being 110 years old. They embalmed him, and he was put in a coffin in Egypt. He believed God so much. Think about this. That he says, God will come through on what he told y'all. And he used y'all in Hebrews. Like, y'all, you know. God will come through. And when he does, okay, I'm going to be laying in this box. And my bones are going to be in this box. You swear to me, you're going to pick up this box and you're going to take my bones with you to the promised land. Like, wow, what faith. It's a dude who suffered. Like I said, none of us ever would have chosen his life. And man, what faith. You know, Joseph had two really choices that he could have made at any point along the way. And he had a lot of points where he came to this fork in the road of like, man, okay, I can either do this or I can do this. I can go this way or I can go that way. And it's the same two choices that every single person has when it comes to suffering. And when it comes to being wronged and evil done against you, anything like that. And here's the two options, okay? Number one, you can turn away from God in anger. Turn away from God in anger. There's numerous people who have done this and who do this. In fact, you may even look at your life and you're like, man, I'm in that season right now. Or I've been in that season before. Or I know somebody in that season right now. You get a bad diagnosis. Man, where is God? This falls through. Where is God? And people just peace. They're just done with this whole Christianity thing. That's an option. I'm not saying it's a good option, but it's an option. Number two is the one I'm gonna persuade you towards, hopefully, is that today, right where you're at, you need to turn to God in faith. Turn to God in faith. This is the story of Joseph. This is like the mantra of Joseph's life here. That, man, I can believe God. Like this week, all week long, I hope you just consistently come to this. When you come to the fork in the road, here's what I want just to resound, like my bald head and this mouth just speaking to you over and over again. I just want you to say this in your mind all week. Man, I can believe God. I can trust God in this. I can trust him. I can trust him. I can trust him. That's the life of Joseph. I went to the eye doctor this last week. I love my eye doctor. She's so kind. And just my yearly checkup. And so I don't have my glasses on. And I live most of the time without my glasses on. And just usually wear them while I preach. And so just went in there for a checkup. And she gets that big old contraption, you know, over your eyes. And she's, you know, flipping stuff left and right and asking me questions. And then she pulls the machine off of me. And she kind of backs in her chair. And she says, well, she says, your distance viewing, you know, you're fine there for the most part. She said, but your arm's length vision is not very good. You know, thank you. I appreciate that. And she said, in such a kind way, you know, your arm's length vision is not very good. And I'm sitting there and I'm talking to her and like, I can read. Like I can read the back screen there. I can see if a vehicle is coming towards me. You're welcome. I could read my notes today. But through going through the test, she was able to reveal some things that I could not see about my eyes. And what she was able to reveal to me is this. She said, you don't even realize that you were having to work to focus. And she says, like, it's like your heart beating, where you just do it naturally, but you're always having to work to focus on whatever is arm length. And she said, so eventually, I mean, it's just going to be strain on your eyes. I thought, well, that's interesting, right? It made me think about what I was going to talk to y'all today about, specifically related to unforgiveness and forgiveness. And I think if we're honest, there's probably some things we're carrying around that you don't even know you're carrying around. Like when I think about my vision, I live in such a way that I don't even know how I'm really living. Like I focus and I'm just used to focusing, so I just focus, right? And it's always been that way, so I just do it because that's the way that feels normal and natural to me. And in the same way, there are some things that are happening in your life that you don't even realize are happening, and the root is unforgiveness. Like your family gets onto you about the surface level stuff. Why are you so angry? Why do you yell at me? Why do you use those words? Why do you do this? Why do you do that? And you often think, well, it's just about the surface. I just need to stop being angry. I just got anger issues. Or I've got this or that, and I just need to stop, you know, doing this or doing that. And the problem with that is this, is if you spend your life dealing with the surface issues, you will never fully be what God wants you to be. And I think the major root issue we learn from the story of Joseph today is the root of unforgiveness, man, that, like I said, it's a cancer. And it spreads. And some of you have been living in it so long, you don't even remember what it was like to live without it. Some of you got wronged as children. There was evil done against you as children. And so you don't even know what healthiness looks like because you never even had the opportunity to get there. Man, my heart breaks for you today. We as a church want to come alongside of you and help you through this. But man, here's what I feel like God is just saying to us today. That this may sound like a hopeless situation. Man, I'm dealing with a lot of unforgiveness. I just don't know how to do it. In fact, I've tried to forgive. I've even attempted to forgive that parent, that person, that boss who messed me over and caused me to lose my job. I've tried. And this is a supernatural thing. And here's the hope for us today. I really believe Jesus stands before you today and just says, listen, you got unforgiveness issues. It's manifesting itself in many, many ways. He says, you just come. Like, I'm not pointing your heart's attention to Joseph today, as godly of as a man as he was. But he's a man. Today, I point your eyes to the person of Jesus Christ, who is really the only one who can help you get past what you're in right now. Yeah, right. Who can ultimately get that shovel down deep in there and pull out the root of what you're facing.